The Nectar of Devotion is from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is the book that's right here. Some of you might be familiar with. And this book was written by Rupa Goswami, one of the famous six Goswamis of Vrindavan, who are direct disciples of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Rupa Goswami took instruction from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu asked specifically Rupa and Sanatan Goswami to scrutinize all of the Vedic literatures and to synthesize them, put them together in a comprehensive way so that everyone could understand clearly the superiority of bhakti and the path of devotional service and how to apply it as well. So this book, Nectar of Devotion, is very important. It's a guidebook for understanding devotional service. It starts off with an introduction which defines what devotional service is. And then it gives a definition of three stages of devotional service, beginning with sadhana bhakti, which means devotional service in practice. And then it describes devotional service in ecstasy or bhava, when one develops some real feeling for it and not just doing it out of duty or out of prospect, or out of fear. And then he describes the characteristics of prema bhakti, or devotional service in pure love for God. And he also gives a description of the various rasas that one may have with Krishna, and the combinations of rasas that work and the ones that don't work. There are some that are considered to be incompatible. And in the beginning of the Nectar of Devotion, there's several definitions given. Anya bilashita shunyam jnana karma anyanavritam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktir uttama. That bhakti is freed from all kinds of desires for gyan, for knowledge, and also for fruit of activity. Means service for service. There's no ulterior motive in performing the service. Not that I'm worshiping the deity so that I can get something, including liberation. That I'm worshiping the deity now, but I want something out of this. And also, it's favorable. It's performed in it's favorable service to Krishna. It's not what I like, it's what Krishna likes. I'm doing it for his pleasure. Anukulyena Krishna Nushilanam. So this is bhakti. Sarva pari vinir muktam tapratena nirmalam rishikena rishikena sevanam bhaktir uchite. And while performing devotional service, one becomes freed from all kinds of designations. What do we mean by designations? One person thinks I'm a cat, another person thinks I'm a dog, someone else thinks I'm a man, and I'm from California, and another person thinks I'm a woman. And these designations are temporary designations, but our real designation is that we are all eternal servants of Krishna. That's our real designation. Beyond the existence of this particular body that I have, I'll go on as an eternal servant of Krishna. Sarva pariva nirmuktam tat paratvena nirmalam. When one performs devotional service, the senses become purified. One becomes freed from the sense of designation. And one engages one's senses. We have senses. It's not that through the process of spiritual life we give up our senses and become senseless. Rather, our senses become purified and we engage them in the service of the master of the senses. Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchade. So this is called the process of bhakti, how it is defined. There are various characteristics of pure devotional service. When one engages in devotional service, there are six characteristics which Rupa Goswami lists at the very beginning. And those are that when one engages in pure devotional service, one becomes free from all distress. The second is that one begins one's life of auspiciousness. In other words, when one performs pure devotional service, one's life becomes fully auspicious. The third is that pure devotional service puts one into transcendental pleasure. Another characteristic of pure devotional service is that it's rarely achieved. Another is that those who take to pure devotional service deride even the conception of liberation. They're not seeking to get freed from the material world even, or even from the process of birth and death. Their only objective is to engage in devotional service. And the sixth and final on the list of characteristics of pure devotional service is that it is the only way to attract Krishna. He's not attracted by anything less than pure devotional service. So Rupa Goswami elaborates these characteristics of devotional service and what they mean to us. Would you agree with me that most people or everyone is interested in getting freed from distress? Everyone agree? I mean, you could argue or you could look at it from the point of view that everything we do in this world is an attempt to become free from distress. For instance, why would I put a lot of extra time into education? In IT, for instance. Just as an example, just throw that out there. Am I very interested in IT? It's what I always wanted to do when I grew up as a boy. I always wanted to study IT. I find engineering very interesting. Well, maybe. But most people take a stance in education with the idea that I'll have a better lot in life once I have an education. My parents tell me this, that if I get a good education, then I'll have a much better time of it. I'll be able to earn a living, go wherever I want. This is, I would argue, a way of getting free from distress. In other words, I'm warding off the impending drag of material nature that pulls me down by taking education so that I can fight against that. It's a great struggle for existence. Why do I work hard to earn a living, to get money? Why do I need money? Most people, well, maybe the stereotype, the typical American dream is that I'll get a good career and I'll make enough money so that I can retire. And once I retire, then I won't have to work and I can just do what I want, be myself and enjoy. Of course, this rarely happens. People are now waking up from the American dream. And all of these are attempts to position myself, to adjust my life in such a way that I can become free from distress. However, Rupa Goswami explains that this kind of adjustment and endeavor for position in the material world will not free one from distress. And he describes that the reason is because our distress is caused by something very intrinsic, and that is that I'm affected by avidya, which means ignorance. I'm ignorant of who I am and what my real position is in the universe. And because I'm ignorant, I perform sinful activities. That is, vikarmic activities, activities which are against the law of nature, which are against God. I've forgotten Him, and therefore, in ignorance, I perform activities that are against His interest and therefore against my interest because I'm a part and parcel of Him. And he describes how there are various kinds of sinful reactions in a cycle. There's prarabdha and there's aprarabdha. And prarabdha means sinful activities that are fully manifested now. They're present, and they're present in the form of this body and whatever kinds of things are happening to me now. This is a result of what I've done in my previous life. And aprarabdha means there are sinful reactions, which are lying in seed. They're in a seed form. They're going to sprout at some point, just not yet. But they're lying there waiting. And there's also a subtle kind of sinful reaction that's on its way to sprouting. So there's a full cycle, that which is fully manifest, that which is lying in seed, and that which is in the process of fructifying. And in all those stages of life, I'm caught in a cycle of sinful activities because of ignorance or avidya. But by performing devotional service, I become free from that cycle of sinful activity, which causes my existence, which causes my continuation of life in the material world, and therefore suffering. Krishna confirms in the Bhagavad Gita, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Puna Avartino Arjuna Mamupetit Tukonteya Punarjanma Navidyate, that in the material world, from the highest planet down to the lowest, all are places of misery, wherein repeated birth and death take place. So there's no place in the material universe of which I can become free from this cycle of sinful activities, repeated birth and death, etc. Except by taking to devotional service. Devotional service is described in the Padma Purana as the process which burns up to the roots the sinful desires themselves and fries the seeds that are lying dormant as unmanifested sinful reactions. And without the taste for devotional service and engaging in that process, even if one performs austerities or other kinds of activities, one can't free oneself from those reactions. Therefore, performing devotional service frees one from all distress because it completely clears the sinful desire within the heart, or the actual proclivity that I might have. That proclivity actually comes from previous sinful activities. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunkte prakriti jangunan karanam gunasangosya sadasad yoni janmasu. Krishna says that my good and bad situations in my life come about because of my association with the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. And therefore, I'm born into a particular situation because of my previous association with the modes of material nature. I have a proclivity. You know what the word proclivity means? Yeah, there's a tendency. There's a tendency to want certain things, to desire certain things. And because they may be harmful to me, they cause me more suffering in the material world. But I can't stop it because I have a tendency to do that. That comes from past sinful activity. That proclivity, that tendency to want to have, to maintain material desires, as Krishna says, a kama kami. There's kama, there's desires that drive me further into sinful activity, into this cycle, which Krishna says, if you're a kama kami, means you have desires and then you desire to have those desires. In other words, you chase after them. When I take to devotional service, because I gain a higher taste and because the process itself clears those tendencies for sinful life, I become free from that cycle. And even the tendency to want to commit sinful activities. It's not even a matter of resistance after a while because I have a higher taste. We heard about this verse on Janmashtami with great profit. Vishaya vinivartante niraharasya dehina rasavarjam rasopyasya param drishva nivartate. Everyone's got some kind of taste for something. There's everyone's tasting something. And they've acquired a certain kind of taste. One time when I was in Jagannath Puri, before the Rath Yatra, I was staying up on the roof of a hotel. We had the whole roof to ourselves, couple of rooms up there, nobody else to bother us, so we could sit up there and do our japa and reading and everything. We could look out and see the temple. And we could also look down with great interest at all the people and animals. And there are lots of people and animals in Jagannath Puri and most other places in India, especially Vrindavan. And it just struck me one day while I was sitting chanting and I was watching, I saw some cows. They were rummaging through these leaf plates to get the last licks on whatever remnants of prasad, Jagannath prasad, were left on these plates. And then there were dogs running up and down, and they had some other kind of taste going on. And there were crows, and the crows were searching out their kind of food. And then there were smaller living entities. I saw some rats somewhere running here and there. And everyone had their little taste going on. They knew what they liked, and they were going right for it. It's funny sometimes that you wonder how these animals know where they're going. Like, I saw some ducks fly across my yard the other day. I looked up. I was chanting japa, and they flew across, two of them. And they were going in a straight line, in a very determined way. They were obviously going somewhere. No GPS. Well, they do have GPS. But it's some internal thing, because they look like, we're going there. You know, it's like, how do you know where you're going? And the dogs in Vrindavan, too, sometimes you walk down the road and you just see them, they're charging down the road with this look in their eye, you know, looking down the road. They know where they're going. Very smart, actually. Hansapriya's dog, Yogi, was staying at the Jariwala's house while she was on leave somewhere. Which is, what is it, 5 miles away, 10 miles away? Okay, a mile or so away. And Yogi jumped out of the second story window and ran home across the freeway, across two freeways. I can't find my way around most neighborhoods, but Yogi found her way home out of a second story window. Anyway, all living entities have some kind of determination, some kind of taste. They know where they want to be, and they know what they want to eat and live, what they want to taste. So that taste comes about by previous association with the three modes of material nature. One, Krishna says, acquires a kind of mode of nature, and therefore somebody likes. I saw when we were driving by the supermarket down there, had a big sign up, said there was a beer tasting coming up on Wednesday. And a lot of people look at that and say, yeah, let's go inquire about the beer tasting. And someone has a taste for drinking that. And in the heavenly planets, Krishna describes how some living entities have a taste for this beverage called somaras. They drink this kind of beverage that, I don't know what it does, but it's some heavenly beverage. People have a taste for that. Everyone has a taste for something. So this tendency, these tastes, they come about because of our previous association. So, vishaya vinivartante niraharasa dehina rasa varjam rasopyasya param drishva nivartate. Everyone has some rasa, some taste for something. And the bhakti rasa, it's a rasa that is described by Rupa Goswami to be above all the other rasas. The rasas in the material world are described in various ways. One is called chapalasukha. Of course, everyone knows sukh means happiness and chapala means flickering. So it's frustrating. It's just like if you have a cell phone these days. Mine doesn't work very well. I think people are suing AT&T now because they signed up too many people. But I don't get very good reception. I get dropped calls all the time. That's chapala sukh. Means you're just about, you think, why, this is such a nifty device, you know, this iPhone. Now I'll talk to people whenever I want. I'll just walk around and, hello? Hello? I can't hear you. That's what chapalasukha is like in the material world. I think I'm going to get some taste, but it's like, you know, I can't quite get it. It's flickering. It's chapala. And right in the middle of it, it gets dropped. You know, right when you think you're going to get something. When the main meal's coming, you sit down in the restaurant, and you're looking at the menu, and it's like, that really looks good. And it's like, yeah, we'll be right back. And they keep coming back, and it's like, when are you coming again? When are you bringing something? Yeah, just a minute. But they never come. The material life is like that. I have the menu in front of me. It looks like I'm going to get something, but I never get it. So this is chapalasukha. And then there's, Rupa Goswami says, bhoga tyag. If I do get any kind of so-called enjoyment in this world, Krishna says, yehi samsparshaja bhoga dukha yona yevate adyanta vanta konteya nateshu ramate buddha. Intelligent people don't like this kind of bhog because it's adyanta vanta. It has a beginning and it has an end. So it's very disappointing. As soon as you get it, then you have to give it up later. So this is called bhogatyag. People actually, they get enjoyment and then they get tired of it on the material level. That taste, whatever taste I think I have, there's only so much of it you can enjoy, and then you get tired of it and you want something else. And from one species of life to the next, does this happen to you? You get it, you take something and then you think this is really good, and then you take too much of it and then you think I don't like it anymore. You could ask my wife. I do this all the time. Yeah, I really like this particular kind of thing, and then 2 weeks later it's like I don't like it anymore. Bogatyag, give it up. But material life is like that. We take some kind of enjoyment, and then later on I renounce it, give it up, back forth. Chapalasuk, bogatyag. But the bhakti ras, the taste that I get from worshipping Krishna, is not like that at all. It's called param dushva nivartate. It's something that you taste for yourself, and yam labha chaparam labham. Krishna says, when you get that taste, you feel like there's no greater gain that you can get. I'm completely satisfied in that taste. And it relieves me from the bhogatyag and from the chapalasuk because I have something that's permanent. I have something that doesn't that I don't want to give up because it's ever intriguing, it's ever increasing. So by taking to devotional service and getting a taste, then I solve all my problems, no more distress in the material world. The tendency to commit sinful activities becomes eradicated. And I'm freed from the cycle of sinful activities, or even eventually from the desire or the proclivity to perform sinful activities. And therefore I become free from distress. And there is no other process which can achieve this, according to Shastra and according to practical experience. And therefore, bhakti is the supreme process, and one becomes free from all distress by practicing it. Any comments or argument about that? Some challenge? Yeah. In
what way is, and the question is, in what way is bhakti eradicating distress? You had cited a verse where it said it burns it away. But one may want to know, what is that is happening in bhakti that the distress is going away? The mechanics of it, or well, the mechanism?
I described how it goes away because we've become free from the desire for sinful activity, but your question about how it actually goes away. Supada mulam bhajata priyasya taktanya bhavasya hare priyasaha vikarma yach chot patitam katanchit tunoti sarvam hridi sannivishta. In the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Karabhajan Muni describes how Krishna, he's entered into the heart of every living entity. And for one who has the tendency to worship him, to give up other things for his service, he eradicates from within their heart the tendency to commit sinful activity. And also, if someone engaged in bhakti happens to slip into what's called vikarma, then Krishna also rectifies from within the heart. Tektenya bhavasa hari priyasaha. It means that somebody who's already committed themselves in some way towards Krishna has Krishna on their side. Srinvatam svakata Krishna punya shravana kirtana hridyantaksto hibadrani vidhunoti suritsatam. This is also listed in the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, second chapter, as an internal process that one who hears about Krishna, which is the primary process of devotional service, just hearing about him, someone who hears about his pastime, attracts the attention of Krishna, who's within the heart. And therefore, Krishna takes a personal responsibility to help free that person from anartas, or unwanted things, sinful proclivities within the heart of the devotee. Yastvindra gopa matavindra maho sakarma bandhanu rupa palabhajana matunuti karmani nirdahati kintu chapakti bhajam govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. And Lord Brahma confirms in his Brahma Sanghita that if from Brahma down to the smallest ant, from Indra down to the smallest germ in the material world, everyone has some kind of karma, karmic debt to pay. Except one who is engaged in bhakti bhajan, in worshiping Krishna, is becoming freed from that debt because Krishna is helping from within the heart, taking away that debt. Yes.
Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances.
Please accept mine.
Thank you. Maharaj, what is the difference between a meditation and bhakti is one point. And the second thing is when you are referring about when you, meditate or do bhakti in thinking about Lord Krishna. See, Lord Shiva was doing the same thing, but he gets sucked up when he, when he sees Mohini, he becomes, tempted towards her. And what kind of karmic past is coming on to him in his life?
Okay, well, two questions. What's the difference between bhakti and meditation?
Yes.
Well, there's a very intricate discussion of that in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. Because on some of the upper planetary systems, there are devotees that are, there are yogis, rather, who are engaged in the process of meditation. And they've become so expert at it that as they're meditating, their bodies actually transform into the personalities or the subject matter that they're meditating on. They've become so perfected at meditation. But Sanatan Goswami describes in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita that chanting the holy name of the Lord is much more powerful than meditation. And because Krishna is personally present in his name, and he, as the personified name, Vacho Vachakam Ityudeiti Bhavato Namasvarupa Dvayam Purvasmat Paramita Hanta Karanam Tatrapi Janimahe, described by Rupa Goswami that there are two forms of Krishna, his personal form and his name, and there's no difference between the two. But then he says there is a difference between the two. He says, of the two, the name of Krishna is even more merciful than the personality of Krishna. Because one might commit some kind of offense, some seva aparad, to the person of Krishna. Or one may have offended Krishna and come to the material world. But the holy name will actively follow the soul to the material world and give an opportunity for him to hear and to associate with Krishna in the form of his name. And by this process of shravana and kirtanam, then automatically the smarnam, or the hearing and the chanting, leads to remembering Krishna in a very profound way that anyone can take to. Generally speaking, as Brahma describes in his Samhita, Pantastu koti shatavatsara sambragamyu vayuradhapi manaso munipungavanam. That the munipungavanam, the greatest of the munis, they engage in meditation. As the translation says, they're drilling the respiration and fixing the mind. And by this process, ascending process, means they're trying by their own power to fix their mind on Krishna through this meditational process. They remain far away, or they can only approach the tips of the toes of the lotus feet of Krishna. But for one who is imbued with bhakti. Premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena santaksadeva hrideshu vilokayanti yam shyama sundaram achintya guna swarupam govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. Such devotees who have bhakti, Krishna reveals himself personally, and they can never forget him. Even the pinnacle of and the best of all devotees, the pinnacle of devotional service is exemplified by the gopis of Vrindavan. And they can't forget Krishna, even if they want to. And sometimes they want to, because they feel so tortured, apparently, by remembering Krishna or feeling separation from him. So sometimes they lament, oh, why can't we forget Krishna? But Krishna enters within the minds of the hearts of the devotees. And this is because he's very much inclined towards those who are engaged in the bhakti process. By my own endeavor, through the ascending process, it's very difficult to understand Krishna. This is why one of the characteristics of pure devotional service, it's rarely achieved. Nayam sukapu bhagavan. Dehinam gopikasuta. Gyaninam chatmabhutanam. Yata bhakti matamiha. Lord Chaitanya's mined this verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he presented it many times. Just a description of how those engaged in meditation, the jnanis and the yogis, the jnanis speculating about the absolute truth, and the yogis who are fixing their minds in a mechanical way through the Ashtanga process, yama, niyama, asana, and there's stages of this Ashtanga yoga one must progress through. Such persons cannot very easily attain Krishna. But for one who performs bhakti, nayam sukapo bhagavan, he's very easily attained. He's very much inclined toward the devotees who worship him spontaneously. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the greatest renunciate and sannyasi, even the great stalwarts at the time, elder sannyasis, used to marvel at his renunciation. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was particularly pointed when he said that the gopis of Vrindavan had the best method for understanding Krishna. Ramya kachidupasana vrajavidu vargena valkalpita. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's opinion was that of all the methods of worshipping or attaining Krishna, there is no better method than that which was conceived by the vrajavidus, the gopis of Vrindavan, in their spontaneous approach to worshipping Krishna. They naturally meditated on Krishna all day long. When he would go away to the forest, their meditation was all day long. How is it that he's in the forest now, he's barefoot, tending the cows, and they were feeling pain that his feet might be wounded by pebbles as he walked around the paths around Govardhan Hill. And that pained them to think of his pain. So naturally, in the process of bhakti, one's thinking of Krishna 24 hours a day. And the examples of those who apparently were materialistic people, like Ambarish Maharaj. The very name Maharaj means he was a king. And he had a kingdom to run. He had energy to move around. He had people to put in prison and all kind. You know, king means a lot of responsibility. But he kept himself engaged in bhakti, devotional service, 24 hours a day by using all of his senses in the service of the Lord. He cleansed the temple. He cooked palatable foods and then offered them to Krishna and tasted the remnants. He bowed his head before the Lord. Every one of his senses was engaged, seeing the form of the Lord. And although he was apparently a materialistic person, he attained complete perfection and is renowned for devotional service because he was connected with Krishna. Those who have attained some kind of a situation of detachment from the material world, as an example, the four Kumaras, Chatusana, they had no attraction to the material world whatsoever. In fact, they don't even wear clothes. They walked around as little children. But they're the greatest of yogis. When they went to Vaikuntha, when they smelled the scent of the tulsi leaves, which adorned the lotus feet of Lord Narayan, their hearts changed and they became attracted to Krishna. And Shukadeva Goswami, who was completely detached from the material world, so much so that even while in the womb, he didn't want to come out. He stayed in there for 16 years. Even Krishna came and said, "You can come out now. You won't become attached." Finally, he came out and he took off running because he didn't want anything to do with family life. He went to the forest, but later he was attracted by hearing shlokas from the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he came back to learn the Bhagavatam. The sages at Naimasaranya wanted to know, how is it that Shukadeva Goswami, who was perfected in his practice of meditation, seeing that everything's equal in the material world, being detached from this, from any kind of sense enjoyment in the material world, became attracted to Srimad Bhagavatam? Why did he take so much trouble at that point to come and study this vast literature? And Suta Goswami answers, "Itam Bhutam Gunohari," because the Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna, and it has the qualities of Krishna, which are transcendentally attractive, even to those who have attained a position of being equipoised and above the attraction of the senses. So, if someone attains some kind of position through balancing their meditation, there's descriptions of Vishramrita Muni, how he had, after 10,000 years of fixing his mind in meditation perfectly, became attracted by Menaka. Actually, he didn't even see her. Perfect meditation after 10,000 years. How did he become attracted? The ankle bells. He just heard the ankle bells, and then he gave up his asceticism and ran off. So there are many examples how yogis, through some kind of meditation on their own accord, had attained some apparent perfectional stage. But the demigods praying to Krishna within the womb before his appearance said, "Yene ravindaksha vimuktamani nastvayasta bhavada bashuda pudaya aruya krishchena paramparam tata patantyato nadrita yushmadangraya," that no matter what position of imagined perfection one has, if it doesn't include the rasa with Krishna, personal relationship through bhakti, then one will eventually slip from that position because it's not satisfying. It doesn't completely satisfy the soul. But those who have come to this position of reawakening their relationship with Krishna, they don't give it up for anything. There's nothing that can attract them because they have a superior taste. Param drishva nivartate. That only comes from bhakti or devotional service. And what was your second question? Yes, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati has answered this question, saying that the character of great controllers like Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma should not be questioned by us. In other words, it's not on the same level as if we see an ordinary person. Lord Shiva is not an ordinary person. Shiram nyatada divikata vishesha yoga sanjayate nihitata. He's almost on the same level as Lord Narayan, but he's slightly different due to his association with the modes of material nature. Difference is like milk and yogurt. Milk you can do anything with, but yogurt, there's only a few things. And he's transformed like that. But he's a great controller. And therefore, his activities, his attraction to Mohini Murti, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati invokes a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, which says, or maybe it's 12th canto, 10th canto, that says the activities of great controllers should not be questioned by us. typically, even Sanatana Goswami describes how these great personalities, including Bharat Maharaj and including Sobari Muni, who apparently fell down from his practice, although he was an exalted soul, were to show an example to others of the power of material nature so that we don't become entrapped. The sons of Brahma, when they saw him become attracted to the external energy, they snickered. And because of that, they all fell down. And they actually became, was it sons of Kamsa? No, they became sons of Devaki, and subsequently were, each one of them was killed by Kamsa. They went through a whole process until actually Devaki asked Krishna for benediction to bring her sons back. And he did that. So she had heard previously that he had brought back the son of his teacher. So she asked, can I have the same thing? Can I have those children back that Kamsa killed? So he brought them back, and after that, she nursed them, and they were taking the remnants of Krishna's taking the milk from Devaki, and then they became liberated. But they went through a whole process of suffering in the material world because of laughing at Lord Brahma, who's a great controller. So we cannot question the activities of great controllers like Lord Shiva, except to understand that it's a lesson to us that we're no competition. We should never let our guard down and think, oh, now I'm safe. Now I've attained some perfection, because we should think even great controllers like Lord Shiva, as shown by their example, that the second I think that I'm a match for the material energy, that I'll be pummeled. Daivahi esha gunamayi Mama Maya Duratyaya. It's very difficult, impossible to overcome. So this process is ongoing. And the more we engage in it, Rupa Goswami says, Syat Krishnanama Charitari Sitaptavidya Pitopatapta Rasanasyana Rochikanu Kintvavarad Anudilam Kalusaiva Justa Svadvikramad Bhavati Tadganamulahantri. That in the beginning, even if I don't have a taste for it, if I take it like medicine, gradually I'll become cured of my disease, and I'll be able to taste the sweetness of the medicine, which in the case of jaundice is sugarcane juice, so you should be able to taste that. But you can't when you're diseased. So those are just a few points. Can we have a few reflections? Since there was an abundance of questions from the start, but could we have three reflections back on anything that we talked about tonight, that you heard, any one thing that stuck in your mind? That's all you got to give me. You want to ask a question? Okay, go ahead.
Maharaj, you said that bhakti process can cleanse the aprarabd, bijam and kutam, the proclivity and desire. But what about prarabd? Like, we already have a body. So last day we were discussing, like, if it's like a common cold, we have to have it for 3 days. So how come, like, after death it can change, but like within this life, can the prarabdha can also change?
Oh yeah. As a matter of fact, Jiva Goswami says that remarkably, the prarabdha is the first thing to be, it's the first thing to be eradicated. And how that's understood is that there are a couple of very famous verses spoken by Devahuti in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the third canto, 33rd chapter, in which she says that those who are engaged in the process of hearing and chanting and bowing before the Lord, even if they are dog eaters, become more than qualified Brahmins if they're engaged in that direct process of devotional service. Jiva Goswami specifically emphasizes, by showing the grammatical structure of that shloka, that it doesn't refer to somebody who accidentally ate a dog a long time ago. He says someone who's actually a dog eater. That's who they are. In other words, somebody who is carnivorous, and they're low class. They have a low class diet and therefore lifestyle and consciousness. But if they are if they become engaged in the direct process of devotional service, that person becomes qualified to perform Vedic sacrifices. That means that their prarabdha has been eradicated, because somebody who's a dog eater cannot engage in Vedic sacrifices. But according to Bhagavat, someone who's engaged in the direct process of devotional service is qualified to do so. And this is repeated by the great Mahajans in many places. Viprad Vishad Gunayutad Aravindanaba Padara Vinda Vimukat Swabacham Varishtam Tadarpita, what is it? Manye Tadarpita Mano Vachanehitarta Pranam Punati Sakulam Natuburimana. Prahlad Maharaj himself says, when he's considering whether he's qualified to offer prayers to Lord Nrsimhadev, because already the demigods had come forward and offered prayers, and was Lord Nrsimhadev happy about it? Was he? Was he or wasn't he? He was angry still. He wasn't impressed at all. The demigods came forward with their Sanskrit verses. Om sahasra shirta mura sahasra kna sahasra pan. He was, and they're like, why? You know, they didn't know what to do. So they took Prahlad Maharaj, said, you're a bhakta, get in there. You know, 5-year-old boy, and he went in. And he began to say that I'm a demon. I was born from a demon family. But then he thought of Gajendra, Bhaktya Tutosha Bhagavan Gajayutapaya, the king of the elephants. And he thought, Gajendra was an elephant, but he had bhakti. So the Lord accepted it. And then he said, if someone with sincere desire comes forward and offers to the Lord with all sincerity, he'll accept that. And then he said these famous words, Viprad Vishad Gunayatara Ravinda Nabha, that if someone has all the qualifications of a Brahmin, the apparent qualifications of a Brahmin, but they don't have bhakti for Krishna, said that that person is lower than, again, a swapacha. A swapacha means one who cooks dogs. He's lower than the dog cooker who is taken to devotional service and has awoken bhakti within his heart. And that person is more qualified than Brahman. He says that person not only delivers himself, but his whole family, his whole dynasty, his whole generations of families become delivered because of that person, because of the power of bhakti. But an ordinary Brahmin, professional, puffed up, thinking I have all these qualifications, he can't even deliver himself. So the prarabdha is changed. And when one, especially, this is the system, the pantra-trick system, is that when one becomes initiated into devotional service by a Vaishnav guru, it's like Rupa Goswami says, or Sanatana Goswami says, this is like the touchstone. When the touchstone touches anything, it turns it into gold. So one, because one's following the path of Krishna and accepting authority through the line of succession from a Vaishnav, one becomes transformed. And Krishna says, such a person becomes equal to me. He comes equal in quality to me. So that means when one begins the process of devotional service through initiation, the Vaishnava Pantratrik initiation system, then one becomes transformed. And in the beginning, someone might say, well, the person's initiated, but they don't seem to be on a very high level. So Rupa Goswami says, they have a siddha deha. Their body is no longer a material body. It's no longer a prarabdha manifest. But it's a siddha deha, which means it's a body which is fit to perform devotional service, even though it's green, like a green mango. Huh? Sadaka deha. I just say siddha deha. So it has a sadaka deha, or practitioner's body, fit to worship the Lord, even though it's in a green state. It will soon become ripe and one will attain, one siddhadeya will be transformed. So I give the example before. It's just like when you might join a team and you don't get exactly, you know, you're not qualified really to play full time yet. Maybe on the bench. But still you have the uniform. And if the team wins the championship, you get the ring too. So you get in, once you get in the game, Krishna gives you special consideration in that way. And your Prarabdha karma is changed. It's not considered the same body.
Just a follow-up question on that. Like you mentioned that first Prarabdha gets changed before other things, proclivity and Arabdha. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, just that there are different opinions. Some acharyas say that it gets changed from the subtle to the gross. Others say the other way. But Jiva Goswami says it's like if you have a stack of lotus leaves and you put a needle through them. Anyone who's ever done that, have you? Lately? Or any leaves. Like if you're stringing a garland, right, and you have a whole stack if you're making a leaf garland, and you have a little stack of leaves and you put a long needle through them, when you do it quickly, it looks like it's all the same. The needle just went through the stack of leaves, right? But technically, you could say it started at one and went to the next and the next and the next. And if you slowed it down in slow motion photography, you'd see it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. But to the ordinary eye, it goes through and it's just done. So really, Jiva Goswami says, when you take to the process of devotional service, you take Vaishnava initiation, then really, I mean, the whole thing's done. Your prarabdha, your aprarabdha, it becomes finished by Krishna's mercy. But if you want to get technical and say which way it went, you could start analyzing which leaf it hit first. But it's inconsequential, ultimately. Hare Krishna. Okay, now can I have some reflections? Anything you heard from the talk, the discussion, anything that you're taking with you? We'll only take three, though. Is the microphone ready? It's poised. We have momentum building.
Whatever one does in the material world, whatever adjustments one makes, whatever position one achieves, still one cannot free oneself from distress. However, by taking on to the path of devotional service, it is possible to eradicate distress.
Could we please give Rakshit Prabhu a hand for that reflection? Okay, we'll only take two more, and that's it. It's a strict cutoff level at two. And could everybody please move up by, say, 5.3 inches, or maybe a little more? What did you hear? Anything? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Prashant saves the day. He's in the back. If you could pass the microphone back. Here's the number two reflection for the day. Hare Rama, Hare Rama.
Oh. One should not question the activities of great authorities.
Thank you very much. Nice reflection. Hare Krishna. And I'm going to be very strict about this. There's only one more. It's the cutoff. One last reflection. Anything you heard that stuck in your mind? One thing you heard that you're sure won't stick in your mind? One thing you heard that you'd like to forget? One thing you heard that you'd like to hear again at some point in your life? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. I know it's been a long week. Yes, in the back, Adi Nanduri, please pass to the microphone.
Just as Prabhuji was asking a question about differentiation between bhakti and meditation, I happened to be browsing through the Bhagavad Gita as it is, and chapter 8, text 8, Prabhupada's purport, in that he says, I'll just state that one sentence, he says, meditation is the focus on the super soul, whereas bhakti is the focus on the supreme personality of the Godhead. So,
thank you very much.
Share that.
Very important evidence to enter into this conversation. Bhagavan means the supreme personality of Godhead. So the full feature of Krishna, Om Purnam Madak Purnamidam Purnat Purnam Udachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vishishite, which relates to the fact that one may have a relationship with Bhagavan, with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is what we cited was the important factor in extricating oneself from the material world and becoming completely realigned in our constitutional position. Itam satam brahma sukhanu bhutya dasyam gatanam naradaivatena mayashritanam naradarakena sakam vrijaru kritapunya punja. Shukadev Goswami described how there are different features of the Lord, like Brahman, like his majestic aspect, like Paramatma or Narayana and Vaikuntha, and there's Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he marvels. Oh, and there's also his external feature of the material energy, and how those who are engaged in worshiping the external feature of the Lord or being bewildered by it, the material energy. Others are engaged in worshiping the supreme aspect of Narayana and Vaikuntha. Some see the Brahman effulgence as supreme. But those who are the most fortunate, he describes, sakam vijaru krita punya punja, like he's talking at that point in the 10th canto about the cowherd boys who are playing with Krishna as friends and wrestling with him and so forth. He said they are the topmost, the most fortunate. This is the pinnacle of devotional service, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give to the world. This understanding that this is the highest position of life, of the living entity, to be reinstated in this spontaneous devotional service with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, that was it. Three reflections. We'll have to cut it off there. Everyone else, please put your hand down. Wait till next time. Thank you very much. Gopremanande.